The demo car pulls up, delivering fresh stones and bottles to the protesters. Its driver, his features hidden behind a ski mask, fires a rifle into the air and draws cheers from the crowd. He fires again toward the Israeli checkpoint, then hits the gas, raising dust and sending his car skidding away. The calls to Allah, chanting and obscenities, become louder. Allah Akbar, kill the Zionists. God and gunfire, the combustible combination. Pete scoots forward occasionally to grab a shot from behind the shelter of a demonstrator. But mainly he paces within his invisible safety zone. Safety zone, what a pathetic concept. Like trying to walk between raindrops. What would Marcus shoot if he were here? Because he would be here. He sometimes covered 3 clashes a day. He had incredible stamina, for which he credited those boxes of raisins. He'd look for dead and wounded, of course, but also for pictures of the youngest demonstrators, the 9- and 10-year-olds. They'd argued about that, the two of them. Why always the kids, she'd said, like they're the only ones here. Why not the men? With their sneers and pockmarked faces, he'd answered. No, for me, the children are the story. She squints and can nearly see Marcus joining this dangerous dance, his hands cupping the lens the way a florist might an orchid, his face pressed to the viewfinder, staring through the lustful eye of his camera, absorbed in the poetry of the scene. Stones arcing beneath tear gas canisters. Click. Molotov cocktails answered by rubber bullets. Click. Night-haired boys pitched against their helmeted half-brothers on an ancient battlefield, 1 or 2 folding to the stained ground. Click, click, click. She inches closer to the crowd, as Marcus would. Crouches, processing the scene from various angles. An Israeli soldier lunges from behind his concrete barricade and, with the skill of a starting pitcher, hurls a tear gas canister with one arm and a stun grenade with another. He swears in Hebrew, a long slur that sounds like a medieval curse. Caddy's eyes are watering. A Palestinian boy with a pink scar from eye to jawbone grabs Caddy's arm and offers a dampened bandana as protection against the acrid tear gas. Caddy ties it around her nose and mouth and inhales deeply from under the bandana. Wrapped around her face like that, it becomes a disguise that frees her. She begins to drift among the protesters like an invisible vapor, taking in their mood. Determination, yes, but also playfulness. They are, after all, mostly kids. A heightened sense of drama, too, runs between them. One of them may die today, so these moments must be full, valiant, colorful. A boy uses a rock to scratch a hand of Fatima in the dirt and then flings the stone toward the Israeli checkpoint with a cry. 2 others hold their wrists together for a moment in what seems to be a gesture of solidarity before dashing closer to the soldiers. Caddy! 3 feet away from her, a bullet hits a Palestinian boy in his right shoulder. He looks to be about 12. The force drives him to the ground, and he falls with a sickening thud. He opens his mouth, but no sound emerges, and then he is hit again, this time in his groin. Blood splatters as though from the brush of a careless painter. He curls up and rolls onto his stomach. At the exit wound on his shoulder blade, a red spot appears through his clothing, then blooms like a flower, but fast, like one of those speeded-up nature films. She is closest to him, and she moves toward him. Gotta drag him to an ambulance. Then she draws back. What she's got to do is not assist the boy, but pay attention to the air turning frantic with keffiyehs and curses, the tear gas stink replaced by the syrupy odor of blood, the guns of the Israeli soldiers now swinging slowly from right to left and back again. She has to be able to report it all. Why, though, is no one helping the boy? Finally, after what seems like a dozen minutes, several young men make their way to him and half-lift, half-drag him to the ambulance about a block away. The boy is not crying, not even whimpering, and what that costs him is etched on his face. Get back! She turns toward Pete's voice and realizes she is standing 6 yards in the open, without cover. 4 boys stoop nearby behind 2 burned trash barrels. She drops to a crouch and then scuttles to join them. They barely glance at her, intent on their stone throwing. Now more tear gas, more coughing. The barrel she's hunched behind is hit dead on by a bullet. It lurches like a man punched in the stomach. Rubber-coated or brass-tipped? From the thud of impact, she guesses the former. Her forearms are covered with bits of ash. She brushes one off, then the other, aware of her sharp wrist bones, the rubbery texture of her palms. She feels a stare hot on the side of her neck and turns toward the shops. A girl, perhaps 9 years old, stands watching. Despite the distance between them, everything about the child is magnified. Long lashes, tiny hands, old straw basket on her arm. Caddy should be where the girl is, instead of kneeling in the center of the street. But she wants to be closer to the violence than that, as close as possible. This rush is unmatchable. Far better than drugs or alcohol, better than collecting quotes like spent ammo after the fighting is finished. The talcum dirt under her knees, the suspended smoke, the wide-eyed child, the percussion of her own heart, every element in this moment is rich and essential. She peeks out to judge the distance of the soldiers and catches sight of a rifle pointed in her direction. She ducks back. The boys are grinning at her now. One tugs her sleeve, pulling her gently to a safer position. She scrunches up more tightly behind the barrel. Another shot ricochets off its metal side. "Bang, you dead," one of the kids teases in English, his smile friendly. She laughs, tosses her head, and closes her eyes in a mock-dead posture. A siren fused with a woman's wail is the coda. As if prearranged, the protesters retreat like closing credits. Sometimes it goes on until nightfall, but this time they've decided to end it early, share a meal, who knows, maybe log on and read a backlog of email. Her boys, the ones she took cover with, wave as they run off. "See you next time, lady," one calls. "You got a date," she answers, doubting that he understands the slang. She moves from behind the trash barrels, aware that she is in the sights of the Israeli guns. The tire still smokes. Her shoes are filthy. Her damp clothes are permeated with sweat and tear gas. She wipes her face with her sleeve, eases closer to the Israeli checkpoint, and scoops up a handful of ashes, dirt, and a spent rubber bullet. She holds her fisted hand to her neck. "Let's go," she hears Pete's voice. "Come on, it's over." These intensified moments exist without a past or even a future. She's not ready to leave. But it is over. The theater is littered and empty. Over, over, over. She opens her hand. Some of the dirt slides down her shirt.